The man was stripped naked, wrapped in ox skin, and dragged behind a horse all the way from the Tower of London to Smithfield Market. He was made to wear a garland of oak to suggest he was the king of the outlaws. When he got to Smithfield Market, he was hanged by the neck until almost dead. He was then taken down, his manhood cut off. He was disemboweled, with his body parts being burnt in front of his eyes. He was then beheaded, with his body parts being cut into quarters. The four parts of his body were displayed separately in Newcastle, Stirling, Berwick, and Perth. This was William Wallace, a Scottish knight and leader of the Scots. In a sham trial, he was tried at Westminster Hall for treason and atrocities against civilians in war, sparing neither age nor sex, monk or nun. He responded to the treason charge, "I could never be a traitor to Edward, because I was never his subject." But this was punishment, medieval style. Hi, and welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, and it's another History Bite episode. I'm your host, Steve. In Elton John's homage to Marilyn Monroe, Candle in the Wind, Bernie Taupin wrote the lyrics, "They set you on the treadmill, and they made you change your name." The treadmill was a Victorian punishment device used in British prisons. It looked more like a water wheel, forcing multiple convicts in a row to perform a climbing motion rather than a running one. But these treadmills weren't designed as health machines. Instead, prisoners were forced to walk on them for up to 8 hours a day with occasional breaks. The monotony and exhausting work was intended to control behaviour. These treadmills could also be linked to machinery. In Bedford Prison, treadmills powered a production of flour. But let's look at other punishments used over the centuries. The pillory was a wooden framework on a platform where the punishment would be to stand with head and hands put through holes and secured for a sentence period of time. Sited normally in town squares, you would be marched along, wearing a placard stating your crime and having musicians marching alongside, attracting attention. People would jeer at you, throw rotten eggs, vegetables and waste material at you. It was used as corporal punishment to humiliate you for certain crimes. It was a common punishment against tradesmen who cheated their customers. Moreover, due to the mistrust, their business and reputation were near ruined, and it was seen as a deterrent to other tradesmen not to cheat customers. In some cases of libel, you might also see people's ears being nailed to the pillory. The writer of Robinson Crusoe, Daniel Defoe, was put in the pillory in 1703 for seditious libel, but luckily his ears remained intact. The last person in Britain to stand in the pillory was Peter Bossy, who, in 1830, was sentenced at the Old Bailey for perjury. In Game of Thrones, there was the famous Walk of Shame. This was inspired by a real Walk of Shame, which happened in medieval England with Jane Shore. The beautiful Jane was Edward IV's mistress until his death in 1483. His brother Richard III then condemned her as a shameful and mischievous woman. He also accused her of being part of a treacherous plot. Her punishment was a walk of shame through London, wearing only a medieval petticoat. She was jeered at throughout with a mass crowd screaming at her, "A whore! A whore!" The scold's bridle was used against English women who were perceived to be rude, nags, or who spread untruths. It was an iron cage, often of great weight. The bridle covered the entire head with a spiked plate or flat tongue of iron to be placed in the mouth to keep the offender from speaking, or they would feel a sharp pain. In order to fully achieve a level of public humiliation, the woman would either be led around town or attached to a post in the public square. The phrase rule of thumb also derives from punishment of women. In England, you were allowed to punish your wife with a stick, as long as it was no thicker than your thumb. Historically in England, if a person refused to plead guilty or not guilty to a crime, a court case could not proceed. The accused would then be taken to be pressed. A wooden board was placed over their body, and stone or iron weights were added until the person agreed to plead or died. This was abolished in England in 1772 with a refusal to plea meaning guilty. Branding was seen as a relatively mild punishment. After the trial was finished, the guilty party was, immediately in front of the court, burnt on the thumb with an iron bearing the letter of their crime. For example, T for theft, M for murder, F for felon. This was ostensibly so that if they ever tried to get away with it again, they would be known as a repeat offender and generally executed. Between 1699 and 1707, the branding punishment was moved from the thumb to the cheek, but it was considered too harsh and self-defeating because it made offenders unemployable and therefore more likely to commit another crime. Branding was abolished in Britain in 1829. The slitting of noses and ears was a common punishment for a host of crimes. It would mark the criminal for their deeds and follow them around for the rest of their lives. In ancient Egypt, the act of having your nose cut off would mean you were not allowed in the city again. The origin of the phrase "pain through the nose" comes from a 9th century Danish tax where you paid your taxes or you had your nose slit. Self-inflicted nose mutilations was known to be used by nuns who, by making themselves look repulsive, avoid being sexually attacked. In the 9th century, nuns in Marseille performed these acts in the hope that they would be spared by the Saracens who were invading the convent. In 1531, Richard Roos, the cook to the Bishop of Rochester, stood accused of trying to poison the bishop. The bishop survived as he did not eat the poisonous dish, but three other members of the household died. Under torture, Roos admitted to the act and he suffered a previously unheard punishment in England. He was publicly taken to Smithfield Market and boiled alive. And lastly, something that certainly reduced the severity of punishments. The curious act, named Benefit of the Clergy, commenced after the murder of Archbishop Canterbury, Thomas Becket. Becket didn't believe that the King, Henry II, should be passing judgment on men sworn to be servants of God, but instead, they should be tried not in a secular court, but in an ecclesiastical court by their peers. This was one of the incidents that led to his murder. After this murder, Henry was in contrition and was forced to concede privilege of benefit of the clergy to the church. Sentences were always lighter than in secular court. The tradition, being changed and challenged many times, continued up until the 19th century. At one point, anyone who could read a selected Bible passage could be acquitted by benefit of the clergy. This was a loophole that was exploited by many criminals, as they could claim to be clergy, as courts generally used the same biblical passage from the 51st Psalm, which people would memorise. It was commonly known as the neck verse. To catch out criminals, sometimes the courts changed the biblical passage. And if you couldn't read, obviously you weren't under the clergy's protection, as shown in 1676. Quote, "He prayed the benefit of clergy, but he was not able to read when he came to the book, and he suffered death." If convicted under benefit of the clergy, you were branded to ensure you could not plead again. Eventually, church and state came to agree that certain crimes, murder, rape, highway robbery, burglary, horse stealing, pickpocketing, and theft from churches could not be acquitted by a Bible verse. The practice itself was abolished in English courts in 1827. Well, that's all for today. I hope you enjoyed this History Bite episode, and if you did, please subscribe, leave a review, and join me on Twitter on the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I've been Steve, your host. Till next time, bye-bye.